हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम ओम श्री महागणपतये नमः ओम सदा शिव समारंभां व्यास शंकर मध्यमां अस्मदाचार्य पर्यन्तां वंदे गुरु परंपराम् श्रुति स्मृति पुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पाद शंकरम् लोकशंकरम् शंकरम् शंकराचार्यम् केशवम् बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वंदे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ओम रघुपति राघव राजा राम पतित पावन सीताराम रघुपति राघव राजा राम पतित पावन सीताराम केशव माधव राजा राम केशव माधव राजा राम पतित पावन सीताराम पतित पावन सीताराम राम राम जय राजा राम 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 जय सीताराम राम राम जय राजा राम 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 जय सीताराम राम 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 राm राम 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 जय जय राम सीताराम जय जय राम सीताराम जय जय राम सीताराम जय जय राम सीताराम राम 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 सहनावतु सहनावतु ओम सहनावतु
ओम सहनावतु
सहनौ भुनक्तु
सहनौ भुनक्तु
सह वीर्यं करवावहै सह वीर्यं करवावहै सह वीर्यं करवावहै सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु
तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु
तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै मा विद्विषावहै मा विद्विषावहै मा विद्विषावहै मा विद्विषावहै मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शांति शांति शांति
ॐ शांति शांति शांति
लास्ट क्लास आई मेंशन्ड इंपॉर्टेंट फाइव डिफरेंट टॉपिक्स which cover the entire teaching of the Shastra. The last topic, the fifth topic I mentioned was the benefit of the knowledge. Enjoyed, enjoyable, by everyone who gains this knowledge, which is the ultimate purpose of studying the Shastra, and which is the ultimate end of the human life. because you know very well the mokshaha, which implies freedom, which means freedom, implies freedom from unhappiness. Therefore, it implies happiness, which means being limitlessly happy. Being happy always, everywhere, with everybody, in all situations, means not being affected, shaken, or disturbed by any situation, irrespective of whatever the situation is. And that end, ultimate human goal, the ultimate end of human life, is in fact identical with this benefit of knowledge, identical with the knowledge, and which is the benefit of knowledge, which implies one having discovered that happiness, which is a synonym of the word fullness, as one's own real nature. Again, this one having discovered this happiness as one's own real nature implies one having understood one's own truth, the self being identical with the truth of the entire universe. That end will be possible, that benefit of knowledge one can really enjoy, only if one has the knowledge. And that knowledge implies the knowledge, the effective knowledge, knowledge which will produce the effect, which means the knowledge which itself is the end, the moksha. When I say produce, it's not the producing afterwards. The knowledge which itself is the end is actually clear, doubt-free, assimilated, ascertained understanding of the self being distinct from the body, mind, and complex. And that distinct self, the self which is distinct from the body, mind, and complex, definitely non-distant and non-distanceable from the body, mind, and complex. And that non-distant, non-distanceable self is the self of all the beings. And that the self, which is the self of all the beings, is the only reality. So this vision must be ascertained vision. It is this vision which is mokshaha, benefit. And for this vision, one needs to have contemplative disposition of the mind. Without contemplative, without entertaining, without having the contemplative, meditative disposition of the mind, this vision cannot become ascertained. So one should take care of one's mind being contemplative. That is fine. Which means one needs to focus one's attention on, for which the mind must be distraction free, disturbance free, focused mind. How can one have the focused mind? Distraction free, disturbance free mind. So being disturbed, being distracted, or being restless, being agitated mentally is not something unnatural. It is a very, very natural thing. So ascertained vision is very much dependent on the contemplative disposition of the mind. Moksha is dependent on this knowledge. Ascertained vision. Ascertained vision is dependent on the contemplative disposition of the mind. Depends on contemplation. So contemplation is dependent on contemplative disposition of the mind. Hope you understand the subtle difference. How to become contemplative? How to have that disposition? Shastram emphasizes an important qualification to become contemplative, to be disturbance-free, distraction-free, agitation-free, focused-minded. One needs to have discovered dispassion. I'm using the words very carefully. One needs to have discovered dispassion means, the word dispassion should not frighten you. It's impossible, because all of us are of this view, it is impossible for us to become dispassionate. Therefore, being dispassionate means, living somewhere in a jungle, not being with other people, not living a normal life like other human beings. That is why many people are afraid of. The minute we say this term, dispassion, without dispassion, one cannot have contemplative disposition of the mind. If I say, this is a bitter truth, it is a fact, but this word dispassion might frighten many people because of the wrong understanding. Because dispassion always, we hear the word dispassion, people always think, I should deprive myself of the, enjoyment of all the pleasures I have in life. I should deprive myself of enjoying the objects I want to enjoy. I should deprive myself of the relationship I have in this world. I should keep away from what the other people are doing. I could keep myself away from all those things which normally, generally, other people are involved in. Or I should be aloof all by myself. I should just be away from everything. And which is impractical, impossible. This is the wrong understanding of the word dispassion we all have. That is why today I thought I should really make it very clear. Because people talk about what is that Now people are all interested in meditation nowadays. Why do we need to meditate if we ask? Oh, meditation is something I want because it is the meditation which helped me arrive at the truth. Meditation or contemplation, we use these two words. Both these words mean a mental activity. It is a manasa vyaparaha, in which body or speech are not at all involved. In a physical activity, mind has to be involved. You have to be focused on anything you do physically. You have to be focused on anything you speak orally. In oral activity, in physical activity, mind is involved, mind should be involved. Otherwise, we call it a mechanical action. So, it is important for one to be conscious of what one is doing physically, orally. That itself is a simple discipline. Being conscious of what I am doing physically, being conscious of what I am speaking orally, itself is a pre-preparation for meditation, which is also a form of meditation because attention is given to what you are doing. Whereas meditation or contemplation is purely a mental activity wherein body or speech are not involved. Kevalam manasavyaparaha, which means you have to be able to focus your attention on something, not with great effort. If you have to really force yourself to focus attention on something, that practice of meditation will be very, very painful meditation, in the sense because it is like asking a monkey to sit quietly for some time. That is why mind is always likened to a mischief monger monkey. Monkey can never sit even for a second in one place without moving or without, doing anything. So the mind is as disturbed as that monkey. But here Shastram says, it is possible for you to be focused. How? If you are not distracted. You cannot be distracted if you are not disturbed. So being focused is dependent on not being distracted. Not being distracted is dependent on not being disturbed. Not being disturbed is dependent on your firm, clear understanding, your dispassion. If there is dispassion on your part, and you will not be disturbed by anything, then you will not be distracted by distracted, then you can be focused. What does the word dispassion mean? Being dispassionate implies being mature. When I say being dispassionate means what? Being mature. Being mature implies having an understanding. So dispassion is something which is discovered by one because of the maturity born of understanding. Now we can ask, what is that we should understand? What is that we need to understand to be mature, thereby to be dispassionate? Understanding is of a fact. We need to understand a fact. What is the fact that we need to understand? What is that I want in life? What did I want in life? What I want in life is what I am choicelessly seeking as an individual is this limitless happiness through all my accomplishments and pursuits. And this limitless happiness means a timeless happiness, spatially limitless happiness, object-wise limitless happiness, which means whether where I am doesn't matter, I should be happy. With whom I am, with whom I am not, I should be happy. Whether things are with me or things are not with me, I should be happy. I should be happy always means my happiness should not be dependent on anything which is time-bound. In nature, understand? My happiness should not be dependent on anything which is time-bound in nature. Why? What I am seeking is limitless happiness, timeless happiness. Is any doubt about it? Please think before you decide. Do you want some you want to discover happiness and you want to lose it again? Who will be interested in? We have to work very hard, you know, and then we need to know. Once you know the self and you discover happiness, this happiness comes and says hello to you and goes away. Will you be interested? No. We are interested in permanent happiness, everlasting happiness, timeless happiness, which means a nitya, actually there's a better word, nitya nirantara sukham. Nitya nirantara sukham. Eternal, continuous, lasting happiness. Therefore, I am very clear what I am choicelessly, unavoidably seeking is this limitless happiness. This is first thing. Okay. And in this world, all that I am enjoying in the world, what I can enjoy in the world, is what all I can experience in the world is subject to time. There is nothing in this world which is not subject to time. The artha pursuit, the money, the wealth, the relationships, friendship, a good name, all the academic qualifications, all those things, success, achievements, all of them are time-bound in nature. The pleasures I enjoy, sensory, aesthetic, intellectual, all the pleasures are time-bound in nature. Even the dharma even any action produces any result, every action's fruit also is time-bound in nature. There's a beautiful description. I'm not going to the details of those things. Action itself is dependent on many accessories. And every the action itself is time-bound in nature. There's no action. Every action consists of many units of actions. Attending the class is one action. Involves many units of action. Come out of the house, take the car key, open the car, door, get into the car, start, drive, keep moving, keep watching, reach the place. Like this, every one action constitutes many units of actions. Every action is time-bound in nature. The time-bound actions result also cannot be timeless. Moksha. So time-bound action cannot produce a timeless. Time-bound action cannot produce timeless, everlasting moksha. If it is not the fruit of an action, then every object I enjoy in this world also is time-bound in nature. There is nothing which is permanent in this universe. This is another fact. Whether we like it or not, this is a fact. You know that. That is why in Sanskrit language, the very word Jagat means that which keeps going. That which comes and goes is Jagat. Which means that which will not be there permanently forever is Jagat. The very word explains Jayate Gacchati iti Jagat. Jayate means that which comes into existence. Gacchati means that which goes. That which comes and that which keeps going, that which goes away is Jagat. Therefore, this is the very word Jagat implies, reveals the nature of the Jagat universe. That one word reveals the nature of every object which forms part of this universe. Therefore, everything is time-bound in nature. Impermanent, ashashvatam. Shashvatam means permanent. Ashashvatam means impermanent. Therefore, here we should make a question. How can ashashvatam Jagat, how can impermanent object of experience, how can impermanent universe, how can impermanent thing give me, or will be a means for permanent happiness? Okay? A time-bound thing cannot give me timeless happiness. An impermanent an object cannot give me permanent happiness. This is the second understanding. The third understanding is what? How do you arrive at this understanding? Not mechanically, not because somebody else is telling you. No, the Shastram makes you think. It doesn't tell you something what you do not know. It makes you think, see what you already know. Or it helps you see. Don't you see this fact? This being a fact. The impermanence of everything, you have to really think. You should not hesitate. People are very scared, frightened of even thinking about it. You can't afford to be a child, no. You have to be a mature individual. One has to. One is allowed to be immature for some time, but one can't afford to be immature throughout. Isn't it? One has to think and accept this fact, which really understand and accept this fact, isn't it? Everything is impermanent means, is another step, which means the permanent thing alone can give me permanent happiness. A timeless thing alone can give me timeless happiness. And what is that? This is the third thing, understanding. Therefore, what is that permanent, timeless, eternal, everlasting thing here? And that timeless, eternal, everlasting thing is implied by the term Brahma in the Shastra. And that is said to be the reality of the universe, the truth of everything here. That is said to be the self of every being. You can say self of every being, you can call it the truth of everything, or you can say the absolute reality of the whole cosmos. That reality which is the self of every being, the truth of everything here, is the only permanent vastu, permanent thing. And Shastram, therefore Shastram says, knowledge, or you do not know what that reality is, therefore you do not know where the very word reality implies its permanence. Because you do not know what the reality is, you do not know the permanence of that reality. Therefore, when I say the permanent reality alone can give you permanent happiness, not that it will give you happiness afterwards. In fact, happiness is the very nature of that permanent reality. Therefore, Shashvata Vastunaha Shashvata Swarupam Anandaha. Therefore, that discovery of that reality itself is permanent happiness that I am seeking. Understand? This is the understanding of the fact of permanent thing alone can give me permanent happiness. And Shastram tells there is no permanent thing other than the reality. Therefore, discovery of that permanent reality itself is discovery of happiness, which is the end. Therefore, I need to know that reality alone for my moksha. If this fact is clear, then you will not be in, naturally you will become disinterested in everything else which cannot give you what you want. Understand? First you need to know what you want, then you need to know which alone can give you what you want. Thereafter, if these two things are very clear, you will understand that nothing else in the world can give me what I want means an intelligent person will naturally grow out of desire for things which cannot give what one seeks. You take your son or daughter to a pawn shop who is 3-year-old or 4-year-old. You go for some buying some important thing that you want, a small tool or something. And then the whole shop is full of colorful toys and things. Whole shop is full of colorful objects. Do you care for what is there around? You just enter into the shop. You ask for exactly what you want. That you go to the shopkeeper and ask him whether he has that particular thing you're searching for. He says, yes, to wait. He says, no, I'm sorry, don't have. Immediately you come out. You don't pay even attention, you don't even look, care to see what is around. Why? And your three-year-old son or daughter jumps there, not moving an inch from the place, asking for so many things. Why? You are dispassionate towards the toys. The child has all passion for those things. You are all toy jnanis. Why you don't care? The situation is the same. You also see those beautiful toys, colorful toys. You know, it attracts even me. Why? Because you have no value for them. Not that you undervalue them. You don't say it is completely useless. Why should they have the shop at all? You don't say that. You have no dislike towards those things. You have no dvesha towards those things, toys in the shop. Nor do you have any raga. You have neither aversion towards them, nor do you have any passion towards them. You're free from raga or dvesha towards those objects. Neither you have passion, nor do you have aversion towards the toys and things. Why? Because you do not see those toys as source of happiness for you. Or you do not think these toys will give you what you are seeking. Therefore, you have no passion. You have no aversion towards them, but you don't think those toys are responsible for your unhappiness. Nothing. It is called dispassion. Understand? You just go, ask for things. And he says, no, just immediately you come out of it. Whereas your child jumps. The child does not know what it wants. All that the child wants, this toy, if I have, I play with it, that I want to have it. Because the child's mind is dependent on the possession of the toy, playing with the toy for its happiness, for the pleasure. I'm not saying being a child is wrong. Being a child is natural, but you are not a child there. You are a mature individual in the toy shop. You know, the same you. Next week, take your wife and go to IKEA. The child doesn't want to stand there. No way. Nothing is interesting for the child. Completely ignorant of what is there available. The child does not know the advantages and usefulness of benefits of possessing those IKEA goods at home. You go for something, big, big things. The child doesn't care. Gets bored. Because completely ignorant of the things. So it has neither, in ignorance also what now, you know, you neither like towards the object nor dislike towards the objects. In maturity also you have nothing. In ignorance also you have nothing. And you make lot of discussion with your wife or husband and then you discuss and then. Understand? Now what I'm saying, nothing wrong I'm saying. Thing is, what I want to understand, this is something, this is a fact. Why you were not interested in the shop? Because you have grown out of desire for those toys. Naturally, nobody needs to come and explain to you why you should grow out of desire for them. Nobody needs to come, and even if somebody comes and explains to you how nice it is to have those toys, still you not be interested. Why? Because it is your own intelligence, your own reasoning tells you that these toys will not give you what you need to live your life. You need money, you need house, you need the conveyance, You need all, it cannot give you what the infrastructure you need to live your life. When you understand a simple thing, that the owning or possessing those toys will not give me what I want in life, what I need to earn money, I need to have a house, I need to live my life. These toys will not give me all those things. Finish the simple reasoning. You just have grown out of desire for them. It's naturally growing out of desire for the world of objects. Understanding their limitations, inverted comma, understanding their limitations, that they cannot give me what I want in life, is maturity. Understand? Understanding, maturity born of understanding results in dispassion. So dispassion, so frustration should not be mistaken for dispassion. Here you are not, being dispassionate does not mean you should deprive yourself of the enjoyment of anything you want in life. You can enjoy anything you want in life. You can have anything you want in life. In fact, the whole world is here for you to enjoy and to own, to have. Only thing is, you need to remember one thing. You can enjoy anything by doing things in conformity with dharma, one thing. But even when you work and you get things, when you enjoy also, you should remember this fact that these things I wanted, I'm enjoying them, but I am sure these things will not give me what I want in life. Enjoy the world, remembering the fact, enjoying the world, not depriving yourself of the pleasures in the world, okay? Enjoying the world, enjoying the pleasures, in conformity with dharma, remembering the fact that these will not give me what I ultimately, choicelessly seek in life. Understand? So without, I'm repeating this sentence, without depriving oneself of anything that is here, enjoying this world, enjoying this pleasures, in conformity with dharma, remembering the fact that these things will not give me what I ultimately, choicelessly seek in life, is what is being dispassionate. Is it clear? That's why I said dispassion is something not to be imposed, something to be discovered. Okay? Dispassion is discovered how? Through maturity, born of understanding of the fact, understanding of fact that all these, the understanding of the limitations of the world and the worldly objects and the worldly things here, that they cannot give the what I seek in life. If this dispassion is an important qualification for a seeker, I am repeating this because people always mistake this term. No individual is really forced or impelled or compelled to give up anything in life. No, you need not give up anything here. You need to remember the fact that what you should need, remember the fact that what I seek cannot be given by all these things other than the knowledge of the truth. So remembering the fact constantly itself is a mature thing, a mature person's expression, isn't it? Itself is an expression of one's maturity. Remembering the fact will help you to be dispassionate. The more you remember the fact, the more you can be dispassionate. The more you are dispassionate, the more you can have mastery over your senses. Absolute mastery is not possible. But you can have relative mastery over your senses. Relative mastery means what? You use all your five senses. You enjoy this world. Remember this fact. Shastram tells the whole Jagat is here for you to enjoy. And you are blessed with all the five different sense organs to appreciate the world of objects. You, this eyes can see, ears can hear, nose can smell, tongue can taste, skin can feel the touch. All these different varieties of objects which you come in when you, the objects which you experience, then they are contacted, when you come in contact with them, how do you respond to the, to this? As a mature person, you can see them, you can appreciate them, but if you can remain, what now, you will think, remember the fact that, you know, this will not give me what I seek in life. I need the house because it is an to live my life, I need the house. So I'm making some effort, genuinely. I try to get it. But definitely owning a house, I'm not dependent on owning a house for my happiness. It's intelligent, it's a very intelligent thing to do. We can't, no, I need a jacket because it's cold weather. You know, to manage the cold climate, I need this, all this dress and then proper clothing. But I'm not dependent on these things for my happiness. Like this, we have to prudently, you know, enjoy the world. Enjoy the world. Enjoy everything, but with the prudence. Once this prudence is there, this passion is there, then naturally, when you see anything, the world of objects cannot stir the mind. When it is experienced, perceived, enjoyed, you will enjoy it, you will leave it there itself. Which means it will not stir, it cannot stir your mind, it cannot disturb your mind. Understand? This is the only way you can protect yourself from being disturbed and stirred. The objects reported by your sense organs, once going to your mind, definitely will stir the mind. It'd be nice to have that. It's good to have that like that. Therefore, what I want to say, as I told you, you can have everything, enjoy everything prudently, remembering the fact, then you are adequately dispassionate. That if you are adequately dispassionate, then you are undisturbed person. As undisturbed person, you know, you are undistracted person. As a non-distracted person, you can be focused. Okay? This is called that being contemplative. I know, entertaining a contemplative disposition of the mind. Is it clear? Now, next question comes. Okay, now I have the understanding of the fact. Therefore, I have grown out of desire for things, which means I'm not really dependent on the external world of objects for my happiness. Therefore, I enjoy them, I use them to live the life. I'm not dependent on them for my happiness. So which means I'm adequately dispassionate. Therefore, I'm not disturbed by the things easily. Situations or people or relationship, anything comes and goes. Relationship breaks, I'm not really disturbed much. Okay, some things I lose, I'm not disturbed much. Little, you'll be worried for 2 days, but still don't really lose your thought there. You're not disturbed. Which means you can remain balanced. Everything can take it. Means you're contemplative. You're able to be contemplative. Therefore, I have this dispassion. I'm focused now. I'm not disturbed. But the important thing is, okay, I have that disposition of the mind, but what should I focus on? Understand? Very important thing now. So contemplation is dependent on 2 things. What is that? One is contemplative disposition of the mind. Only then contemplation is possible. Then I should be clear about what should I contemplate on. Even if you know what should I contemplate on, what should I focus my attention on is clear, but still I do not have the disposition of the mind, contemplation becomes difficult. But I have the contemplative disposition of the mind, but still I do not know what to contemplate on, then also contemplation is not possible. Therefore, the 2 things you should remember. Okay? The contemplative disposition of the mind is the qualification, isn't it? Then what to contemplate on must be very clear. The object of focus must be only one fact. Only that is contemplation. What am I dwelling upon must be only one clear, doubt-free fact. If other than that one clear, doubt-free fact, if you are focusing attention on anything other than that, then that is not contemplation. If you focus attention on anything, any given thing, other than that fact, it happens to be the mental activity, I can call it meditation. But here, what you have to focus on must be only one fact. Only then it can be called contemplation. And if you ask me what is that fact I should contemplate upon, I should focus my attention on constantly, continuously, I should dwell upon, what fact? What is that fact I dwell upon makes my dwelling upon a contemplation? Know the fact? I, the self, am pure consciousness, the all-pervasive, secondless reality. I have brought in 3 stages of teaching or learning in 1 sentence. I, the self, am the consciousness, the all-pervasive, secondless reality. This is the fact about yourself. This is what you have to focus your attention on. If you are focused person, if you are very focused minded, you are not disturbed and distracted. Therefore, you are able to focus on this particular fact. Repeatedly, continuously, constantly. Without recurring to stop anything that you need to do externally. Then you are contemplative. Got it? Until then, you cannot say you are contemplative. Okay, next thing I tell you. Now suppose you ask me, is it a fact I, the self, am consciousness? One lesson. The all-pervasive reality, all-pervasive, second lesson, third lesson, okay? Reality. It is the fact about your real self. It is as real as. This is a fact. How is this a fact if you ask? How you are so clear. Wave is water. You have no doubt. How clear you are. Which is all pervasive. Wave is water. The all pervasive water. And that secondless reality with reference to ocean. Is it clear? Similarly, here I, the self, am consciousness, all-pervasive reality, all-pervasive secondless reality with reference to this entire incomprehensibly vast universe. This is a fact. So, you cannot dwell upon this fact unless you understand this statement is a fact. So contemplation is dependent on what? Understanding of the fact about yourself. This fact, it is not simply, because not mechanically, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi. It is not mechanically prattling. You are focusing attention on this fact which has been clearly, doubtlessly understood. Fact. You cannot dwell upon this fact unless you understood this fact. This only when you understand, you can understand this being a fact. Is it clear? Therefore, so here remember, contemplative disposition of the mind and the fact being clear about the fact I need to dwell upon. These two things are important for contemplation. So in order to have understood the fact, I tell you, without having understood this fact, if you simply focus attention on anything in the world, or any object, or any mantra, or anything, I'm not saying that is not a useful thing, but that is not contemplation. Understand? And for this contemplation, this is what is contemplation. You should know this is what is contemplation. Which will result in ascertained vision, which is the benefit of knowledge. Devoksha. Therefore, this understanding of this fact is possible only if you have clearly understood this fact. In order to understand this fact doubtlessly, clearly, you need to have reflected upon this. Before reflecting on that, how can you reflect on something if you have not understood at all first? Therefore, you must have done Shravanam first. Understand? Therefore, one must listen to the subject matter of the Shastram for a length of time, systematically, regularly, with the commitment, with the great faith in the teaching, with the help of a competent teacher for a length of time, then you understand the fact. Even though you understood the fact after Shravanam, so without Shravanam, understanding of the fact is impossible. Having understood this fact, still doubts will be possible. So reflect upon this fact you understood through repeated listening, which will help you resolve your doubts. Thereby your understanding will become clear, doubt-free understanding. Only then you can, with your focused attention, if you dwell upon this fact, then you are contemplative. Being contemplative without any fail will result in ascertained vision, unforgettable vision, which is mokshaha. Is it clear? So, therefore, a benefit of knowledge to the expert, what is that fifth one, isn't it? Now, before that, that is why the fourth topic discussed in the Shastram is what? The fourth topic discussed in the Shastram is the oneness of the truth, of the individual and the total. Because the fourth topic helps you understand the oneness of the truth, of you, the individual, and to the Lord, the whole, the total. When you say you, means what? The truth of you, the truth of the cosmos being one and the same is discussed in the fourth topic. Why? Because only then the fact will be clear, doubt-free. Understand? The clear, doubt-free understanding alone has to be dwelt upon in order to be ascertained, which is moksha. Is it clear? Therefore, fourth topic is that. And before you go to the fourth topic, what you need in the third topic is what? The truth of the whole is analyzed. The truth of the whole cosmos is, for you to understand the truth of the individual and the truth of the whole being one and the same, you should know what? What is the truth of the whole? This, how can you see the truth of the universe and the truth of the individual being one and the same? If you do not know what is the truth of the whole. Therefore, the truth of the whole is discussed in the third, the topic. And the truth of the individual is discussed in the first, the second topic. Understand? So how Shastra beautifully takes you. discusses the truth of the individual first. Thereof it discusses the truth of the whole. Thereby it helps you see the oneness of the truth of individual and the truth, the whole. The third topic. And later on, which it prepared, thereby it prepares you for contemplation. And contemplation will bless you with what? The benefit, will bless you with the knowledge, which itself is the benefit of knowledge, the moksha. Do you make sense? And before all that, you must be qualified for this knowledge. So qualifications are discussed not for you to decide whether I should pursue the knowledge or not, but for you to decide whether I am qualified or not. If I am qualified, fine. Oh, I am qualified, you can be happy to continue to pursue your knowledge. If you are not qualified also, happily you can make all possible efforts to become qualified. Not to give up the pursuit. This is how the teaching is presented. Is it clear? The next thing I want to say is, before the teaching begins, how does the Shastram help you arrive at the truth of the individual? How to analyze the truth of the individual, isn't it? Shastram helps you to see first what you are not logically. Reasoning and logic is used by Shastram for you to understand. You can use logic. Logic is used, in fact, to understand, to help you understand what you are not. But logic cannot help you understand what you are. To understand what you are, Shastram alone helps. Logic or science fail in helping you understand what you are. But it can help you understand what you are not. So Shruti here, the tradition uses both yuktihi, the logic, first to understand what you are not. Thereafter uses the Shruti, the Shastram, to understand what you are. So before you try to understand what I actually means, you need to see what all I does not mean. This distinguishing what I is not, this differentiating or distinguishing I from what I is not, in order to arrive at what I is called Drit Drishya Vivekaha, discriminative understanding of seer and the seen, knower and the known. Drit Drishya Vivekaha. See, it is easy for you to understand, to discriminate from the laptop from the mic. Why? Two different things, serving two different purposes. You don't need to decipher, say both or one, you won't listen. That serves a different purpose. That is of different size and shape. This is different. You know clearly, this is different, that is different. Because they're separable from each other. With reference to wave and water, or ocean and water, the two, no, they're not separable physically. But still, there is difference, isn't it? You have to distinguish one from the other. Not distensible, but distinguishable. Water is non-distensible from the ocean, but distinguishable. Similarly, here, the self is non-distensible from the non-self, but is distinguishable from the non-self. For this distinguishing self from the non-self is called what? Now, there is a method of distinguishing the self from the non-self, which is called Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya. The method is called Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya. Drishyam, the word Drishyam in Sanskrit language means object of sight. The seen object is called Drishyam. Drik means seer. Seer and the seen. Seer is the subject, seen is the object. Therefore, it is also said to be subject-object analysis. If we take it correctly, it can be said to be knower-known analysis. By understanding what the known is, you can distinguish the knower from the known. Therefore, Shastram tells, the entire world of objects external to the body is object of your knowledge. The world is known by you, and you are the, every individual is addressed by the Shastram. Every individual is individually addressed. You are the knower means which you. The Shastram means me or somebody else next to me. No. Every individual is addressed here directly. You are the knower with reference to this universe. And this universe is object of your knowledge. It is known by you, known to you. That is why you call this what? This universe. Why do you say this universe which I experience? You say because you don't say I there. You use only this because it is, this is an object of your experience. And external to the physical body. How anything in the world indicated by any pronoun. I'm coming to the class now. Okay? So anything indicated by any pronoun other than the first person singular pronoun I is an object of knowledge. How Shastram defines, what is an object of knowledge? What do you mean by saying an object of knowledge? Any object, every object, indicated by any pronoun other than the first person singular pronoun I is an object of knowledge. That, this, it, those, these. Then whether you use the pronoun that, something is far, use the pronoun this or it, something is near, till objects of knowledge. However nearer the object, still you use, if you indicate, you use the pronoun this, then it is an object of knowledge. Therefore, anything seen by you, heard by you, smelt by you, tasted by you, is all object of knowledge. And indicatable through, by this pronoun, this or that. Therefore, when you come closely, you start with your dress. You say, this is the dress. You can't use the pronoun I to indicate the dress. So also you, to the physical body, you next go, just go to. And every part of the body is indicatable using the pronoun this, 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 this. These are feet. These are shanks, these are thighs, this is back, this is front, this is trunk, these are hands, these are arms, these are fingers, and these are nails, these are toes, and this is face, these are eyebrows, these are eyes, this is nose, these are lips, these are ears, this is head, this is hair, this is neck. What not? I don't know what I missed. Therefore, you cannot place I in indicating, in mentioning, in pointing out any of the parts or the entire body. Therefore, you negate this body as non-I. Na iti. Na iti. In what now? Not this. This is the first negation at the physical level. You have only negated the physical body as the non-I. Non-I means non-self. Why? Indicated by the pronoun this. It's object of perception. It can be seen. It is evident to me. It is seen by me. Known by me, known to me. Therefore, definitely, I am the knower. I am the knower. This body is known to me. Therefore, I is not the body. I is not the body. Body is non-self. Okay, we'll see the negation of other things in the next class. Only today I started the class. After how many weeks?
This is the 14th.
Huh?
14th week.
Yeah, 13 weeks preparation. Today I started. Some of you might have thought, Swamini mentioned about contemplation. He has not said anything about meditation. I'll talk about it next week. Okay? Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harih Om Tat Sat. Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harih Om.